Welcome to the Security Serengeti. We're your hosts, David Schreier and Matthew Keener. Stop what you're doing and subscribe to our podcast and leave us an awesome five-star review and follow us at SerengetiSec on Twitter.
We're here to talk about cybersecurity and technology news headlines and hopefully provide some insight, analysis, and practical applications that you can take in the office to help protect your organization. This week, we are with 100% less AI.
Is it 100% less?
I don't know. It's not 50% less. 50% less would be 1.5 articles. Hold on, I'm scrolling. Do we have anything? We don't have anything AI in here.
No, right. We don't. You are right. 100%. Well, as usual, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are ours and ours alone and do not reflect the views or opinions of our employers.
You know, it's a good thing we don't have as many FBI agents as China has hackers. They'd be on every street corner, panhandling. Then they'd arrest you for solicitation.
Most accurate.
Yeah.
All right. First article is solar winds detected 6 months earlier.
This blew my mind when I saw this. I was like, are you effing kidding me?
This falls in the category of, you know, life is stranger than fiction. So this comes to us from Bruce Schneier, who pulled this out of a Wired article. So apparently the U.S. Department of Justice, Mandiant, and Microsoft all stumbled across the solar winds breach 6 months before it was actually finally discovered by Mandiant. So this would have been May of 2020. And when Mandiant finally discovered it, it was December.
And honestly, I can't blame them. Like when you read over some of the details of this, it was a tough one. It was a tough one to find, although there was some obvious errors they made in the process.
Yeah, and there'll also be a link in the show notes to another Wired article that goes into all the details in the background of how they did finally run this hack to ground. But the attackers who compromised SolarWinds, in case you've forgotten, because it has been, 2.5 years already. So they installed a backdoor into their Orion product, which was sold to about 18,000 customers. And they did it at compile time. So the eventual outcome of that compromise was that the hackers were able to access 3% of DOJ's 0365 mailboxes, and DOJ has over 100,000 employees. So about 3,000 or more employees had their mailboxes compromised.
They probably just ran out of time. Like there's only so many people you can access, at least, and understand what the data you're getting.
Yeah, because I think they blamed this on Russia, so they don't have the enormous number of hackers that China does in order to, you know, use the volume on that. But during the breach, the employees at 27 U.S. attorneys' offices, including ones in California, New York, and Washington, D.C., were compromised. And the hackers had access to these compromised accounts from May to December. So for that entire six-month span, they had access to those mailboxes. And they were able to get access to the full mailbox, which is all sent, received, stored email attachments, etc., during that time frame. Now, this all comes back around to how did they discover this in May? Well, it turns out that DOG was piloting the Orion software in May, and they discovered unusual traffic from that software at that time because it was apparently communicating with an unfamiliar system on the internet, quote unquote. So the DOJ asked Microsoft and Mandiant to help them because they suspected that the hackers had breached the server, and even at that time, believed that it could possibly have been a vulnerability in the Orion software. So they obviously reached out to SolarWinds, but the company engineers were unable to find a vulnerability in the code in July of 2020. So even reaching out to SolarWinds, it took them 2 months before at least the engineers were to involve the engineers or for the engineers to come back and say, we can't find any vulnerability in our code. And as mentioned before, it's because the vulnerability was not in the code. It was introduced at compile time.
Yeah.
So eventually DOJ just kind of gave up, said, yeah, I guess we'll just buy it. Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I mentioned this later, but this seems like a good place to talk about it too. I don't know that any reasonable company would have found this issue. Like, because it's in the code at a level where analysts can't get to and IR folks can't get to. Like, all they have is that there's this weird connection going out. And if the attackers have been clever about naming it, it may not even look that. Like, if it's going out to, like, solar or like solarwinds.fileserver.net or something, you know, some name that looks like a legitimate place for SolarWinds to reach out to. I don't know. I don't remember what the URLs or the IP addresses they did use for this, but this would have been real hard to find for an analyst. And then it would have been real hard to convince your leadership not to run it. They're like, well, why not? Like, give me positive proof that this is bad. And you're like, I can't. It's just weird.
I would say for any other company that would
You're right. You're right. Mandiant was involved. Like, Mandiant should have been able to figure this out.
Well, Mandiant did figure it out. But not only that, but you have the DOJ who has unlimited resources to figure out what that other system was on the internet as well. That's so true. I would not give them a pass on this at all.
No, yeah. The DOJ should have figured this out. Mandiant should have figured this out. But like 99% of companies out there, this is exactly what would have happened. They'd been like, this thing's weird and we can't figure it out. Well, can you give us a reason not to do it? No, it's just weird. It looks suspicious. And they're like, right. Well, we're going to keep going.
Yeah, and we're going to block it at the edge anyway, so this callout's going to fail. So
No, because it's coming from the inside going out. I highly doubt nobody blocks stuff going outbound. Hardly anybody blocks stuff going outbound.
I mean, if you're doing your shit correctly, then
I agree.
Your servers should be whitelisted outbound. Your servers, yeah. I can understand.
You should.
Workstations, you're going to cast a broader net, right? You're gonna go based on whatever your proxy categorizations are about where they can go on the internet. But your servers should absolutely 100% be whitelisted to where they can go on the internet. They should not be able to go anywhere which you have not specifically designated in your firewall or your reverse proxy or your proxies.
I'm actually curious. I wonder if someone's done a study on this. I would actually love to know what percentage of people are actually blocking outbound traffic.
Well, at the time the SolarWinds event happened, some companies did not get compromised because they were doing that level of filter. And there were articles spotted at the time. But that should be absolutely standard fare.
I agree. I absolutely agree. I have not seen it very much.
Okay. Right. Well, I can't easily find it. Hope it gets better.
Yeah.
And here's another reason why they should not be given a pass. Is to quote the DOJ spokesperson, while the incident response and mitigation effort was completed, the FBI's criminal investigation remained open throughout.
Interesting. So they knew that it was bad enough that they opened up a criminal investigation, but they still purchased it.
Exactly.
All right, that's fair.
Exactly.
So they definitely figured out that it was malicious. Otherwise, they wouldn't have brought in the FBI and opened a criminal investigation.
Yeah. And so, yeah, I'm not giving them one, not even an iota of a pass on this. They are wholly responsible for everybody getting screwed on this, in my opinion. But Mandiant, Microsoft, and SolarWinds all declined to comment, obviously, based on what the DOJ has spilled their guts about here. At the time, the DOJ notified U.S. Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Agency in the DHS, but failed to notify the NSA, and apparently the NSA is pretty miffed about it.
I find it interesting how little. So I was listening to an RSA talk. I think I put this somewhere else. No? Weird. I was listening to an RSA talk the other day, and the Secret Service was on a panel, and they were talking about how every company needs to come and tell them when something bad happens in their environment. But now we've got here the National Security Agency was miffed, but the CISA was notified, but DOJ didn't notify the Secret Service. Like, it's just all these government firms, like all, or not firms, government agencies, just all kind of competing against each other. And none of them are talking to each other. None of them are coordinating with each other. It's kind of ridiculous.
Well, I think this all comes down to the reporting chain, because the government came out with guidance on reporting incidents. And they put CISA in the reporting chain, but they didn't put the NSA in the reporting chain.
Yeah, we're talking
and
about
that's
that.
Just
yeah.
Bottom line that it comes down to there. But when you've got a zillion agencies all doing the same thing, then how do you know who to even tell about anything? It's just, it's a mess.
Yeah.
But at the same time this whole thing was going on, there's a security firm called City that was also investigating a breach at a U.S. think tank, which they had traced to the Orion server, as well as Palo Alto Networks in September discovering anomalous activity related to its Orion server. But neither of them ran that to ground either to discover where the problem was, obviously. And to give some context about why this was such a complex problem is that the Orion software consists of 18,000 files of over 14 gigabytes of code and data. Eventually, when Mandiant was brought in December, when Mandiant was compromised in December through this exploit, they finally found the code in a DLL file, which contained 46,000 lines of code and performed more than 4,000 legitimate actions, and then that one illegitimate one. The DLL was signed by SolarWinds, obviously, and they discovered that it was actually the Orion software, not a compromised version of the software, actually arrived at Mandiant by downloading the latest version of Orion and finding the exact same code in that downloaded version. So the reason this matters is, you know, put yourself in these guys' shoes, like Matt said a minute ago. Is what you found actually an false positive or not when you're looking at it? Or are you just writing it off because you can't figure it out? I'm not saying it's easy, but...
Yeah, because we see this stuff. I'm thinking back to when I was an analyst, and there's all kinds of weird stuff that goes on. And part of this, a lot of this is developers' fault. So I'm just going to play all the blame on developers. We have all these protocols and we have all these ways that things are supposed to work. We have ports you're supposed to use. We have documented ways that technology is supposed to work. But then there's all these edge cases where people decide to do their own thing. They're like, I'm just going to use this port, you know, oh, I'm supposed to use port 80, whatever. I'm going to use port 8080. I'm going to use port 8088. Oh, I don't want anybody to read my PowerShell code. So I'm going to encode the PowerShell commands, which sets off, you know, any behavioral based detections you have for encoded PowerShell commands. Just like this kind of all this ridiculous stuff that developers and people use that doesn't meet kind of the standards and the protocols that triggers and deluges analysts and all these things that look malicious but aren't. So I'm not surprised that this one thing that, you know, reaching out to a weird IP address. Again, we talked earlier about how they shouldn't be excused from it. They figured out enough of it to realize it was malicious and just went with it anyways. But for 99% of companies, like this is the hard stuff that you can't find.
Yep. So good luck. All right. Next article. China has 50 hackers for...
It's my article.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just running through it. Next article. China has 50 hackers for every FBI cyber agent, says Bureau Boss from The Register. This is our first article from The Register this week. So in summary, it is time to panic. China has a larger cyber warfare program than all other nations combined, apparently, and has stolen more of our data than all other nations combined. I think it was Christopher Wray said that if FBI cyber analysts and agents focused only on China, they'd be outnumbered 50-1. And the FBI had all these stats about how terrible things are. They're tracking over 100 ransomware variants. It's becoming more difficult to separate nation-state and criminal threats. The FBI blocks over 15 million unauthorized connection attempts each week. And all this fear-mongering is because he's requesting more budget. He needs $63 million more for 192 more cyber positions. Drink. But weirdly enough, they will also be used to target online drug marketplaces.
And I guess they're trying to get part of the $63 million from the DEA's budget.
I don't know. So there's a bunch of stuff in here. There is a bunch of stuff in here. Quality of hacker was not discussed. Sure, we're outnumbered 50-1, but this reminds me of that age-old philosophical question commonly discussed in schoolyards. Would you rather fight one horse-sized ducks or 50 duck-sized horses? Well, David, which would you rather fight?
I'm thinking the 50 duck-sized horses because you can
think
kick
so
them.
You can just kick them, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, one horse-sized duck is terrifying.
Well, at least it's not a goose. That would be even worse.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, he pulled that number straight out of his ass, though.
Yeah, I was wondering. I was like, wow. Do they really know exactly how many hacker employees that China has? No.
He couldn't very well go to Congress and say, hey, we're doing great, but we need more money. No, he's got to say, we're outnumbered, we're outgunned, we're being defeated. We need more money. Because the government is the only place where failure is rewarded by getting more money.
I don't know if I would agree. I mean, I do agree about the failure part being rewarded with more money, but I feel like the whole doom and gloom thing is big in corporations too. where it's all like going to the board and talking about how scary things are and how we need more money so it'll be less scary. So I think the methods are the same, but
yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah. Well, the difference is you in private corporation, you correspondingly have to talk about how well your program did, but how scary and big the bad guys are. They're all APTs. We need, you know, $10 million so we can get an anti-APT system.
Well, the difference here, though, is that when you go to the board and say, hey, I need $1 million to do X, the board has to then say, okay, we're going to not do this other thing for $1 million. Instead, we're going to give you this $1 million. Yeah. But when you're talking about the government, they simply print that extra $63 million for everything you want to do, which hurts everybody with inflation. It's not exactly comparable, because with the government, there's no trade-off. They just print more. Well, the trade-off is they're not impacted by the trade-off. You know, it's kind of the privatized profit, public losses thing where, you know, sure, they get their $63 million and then the entire public is hurt because they printed that money.
That's fair. So they talked about over 100 variants, right, which made me wonder about how many actual groups, because I think for ransomware, there's only like 10 major groups right now.
Yeah, I think what he was really talking about was affiliates. You know, you got 10 major groups and then they have their ransomware as a service affiliate program or programs, which encompass, you know, dozens, if not hundreds of other malicious actors.
It could be, yeah. I didn't think these metrics were useful metrics. I mean, like the 15 million unauthorized connection attempts, that's the kind of thing a metric of busyness, but it's not even busy. Like you're not investigating 15 million attempts each week. It's being blocked by your firewall, hopefully, if you have them configured correctly.
Yeah.
Useless metric.
Well, this is how an idiot who knows how to send emails tells someone who doesn't even know how to use a computer how computers work.
Really, tell us how you feel about the government.
Yeah. Hey, if you look at the makeup of Congress, what do you have? You have a bunch of old lawyers. I mean, what the heck do they know about technology?
Yep.
No, they don't know anything. You know, because if they were on the ball, they would ask him, well, why didn't you, you know, catch the Russian hackers who compromised SolarWinds in May?
Oh, boy.
And you know, most of the stuff that the FBI spouts off is not true. You know, the FBI has got investigations into destructive attacks like these all over the country in communities large and small, is what he told the committee. And we know not even local cops investigate small cyber crimes. He also says they are taking the fight to adversaries through joint sequenced operations and rapid information sharing with the private sector. And the private sector wants to have nothing to do with sharing information with the FBI.
It doesn't help. Oh, this is what I was talking about before, where the government agencies don't even cooperate amongst themselves, like CISA and the Secret Service and Department of Justice and the FBI and the National Security Agency all are trying to like lay claim to parts of this. So they're just too busy fighting amongst each other.
Yeah. And he specifically also brought up Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, which allows the FBI to conduct warrantless surveillance, counteract Chinese cyber attacks, and has helped to combat ransomware attacks. Like, how does warrantless surveillance combat ransomware?
I mean, I guess theoretically they could be surveilling the criminals who are doing it, but then they're also surveilling everybody else at the same time. Hardly worth it.
Well, which is what they're doing.
Yeah.
And he also made a reference to the fact that the Bureau is taking significant steps to ensure it complies with regulations governing the use of Section 702, which we also know is not true, because the FBI conducted up to 3.4 million warrantless searches of Section 02 data to find American communications. And there'll be a link in the show notes to the EFF article discussing that.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. 3.4 million. That is, yeah, I don't know. I can't even say anything about that right now. I will, before you go on to finish this, there's something as I was reading this that I did want to call out. They specifically did call out it's becoming more difficult to separate nation state and criminal threats, which is an interesting comment. Specifically, this goes back to what we were talking about threat intel 2 weeks ago. Like, this is one of those places where the big argument for threat intel is you can look at what APTs and what nation states are targeting you, so you can specifically guard against those. But on the other hand, like the criminal threats, that are going to target everybody or whoever they can make money from are using very similar techniques. And you can't just choose to ignore those. So just, I don't know, it just kind of goes back to that whole threat intel is not all that useful because you have to be constantly guarding against everything all the time because you could be hit by anybody at any given time. That's the nature of being online.
Yeah. Well, if you look at it from the FBI perspective, who cares? Their mandate is to protect against both of those.
Yeah.
So yeah. Is it really all that relevant which one it is? But anyway, during his speech before Congress, he said that China has a multi-pronged strategy to lie, to cheat, and to steal. And that's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. Because the FBI is not your friend. They're not asking for more money to protect you. They want to keep you surveilled and in check. And they will tell Congress whatever bullshit they need to convince them to get them more resources. And it's all really just show. Because Congress will give him whatever he asks for, even if he said, you know, we need more espresso machines.
But $63 million for espresso machines?
They'd give it to him.
I think the big thing here, though, is that adding caffeine to an FBI agent makes them at least 20% more effective at cyber.
Oh, well, that's definitely worth $63 million then.
Do you remember the XKCD about the Balmer Peak?
No, I don't think so.
So it's an old XKCD comic strip about programming skill, how programming skill diminishes over versus blood alcohol concentration until your blood alcohol concentration reaches 0.14 and confers superhuman programming ability.
Well, that's handy.
I'm wondering if there's also a similar, I'm going to stick that in the show notes for anybody that's not seen that. There's an XKCD for everything, of course. Yeah. But I wonder if there's like a level of caffeine. It's probably the opposite, actually. It's probably like, you know, a little bit of caffeine makes you a little bit better. And then there's like an opposite. When you reach a certain point of caffeine, you're too jittery and you're just like hitting keys randomly.
You can't type because your hands are shaking so bad. I try to keep my hands like that permanently, though.
Oh, boy.
Because if you consume a lot of caffeine and a lot of acid at the same time, you get that blur effect. Oh, that dead silence is hilarious. She's like, how do I respond to a statement like that?
All right. Moving on to the stealth browser.
Yes. So Searchlight Cyber has launched a stealth browser for safe dark web access. And this comes to us from CSO Online. Yeah, finally, is what I thought when I read this. So they announced, the Searchlight Cyber announced this launch of a stealth browser, which is a virtual machine for cyber professionals to access dark web and conduct investigations anonymously. So you can use it to securely access Tor and I2P onions on the dark web. And the way they do this is they generate a virtual machine that can directly be accessed via any internet browser. So it's basically VDI delivered via web browser. So Microsoft has the web client for remote desktop services and VMware has Horizon HTML access. So this is not totally new science here for this, but it's a pretty cool whiz-bang idea, I think, to get people into the dark web. Because I assume what they're doing is really they have their own VDI-like service that they're offering people and they're going to access via a web browser. I'm just wondering what pre-built tools are going to have installed on the virtual machines. Is it just a Tor browser? It's got to be more than that, I would think. And then how do you get the data back from your investigation from that VM? Is it just copy and paste?
I was kind of hoping that this would be like a Kali Linux VM. So like, you know, you open it up and it presents you with a bunch of tools and like a bar and it allows you to access these directly. But like it includes analysis tools and like data saving tools, data parsing tools, stuff like that, all built into the browser.
Into the browser, you know, because you're just accessing a virtual machine via the browser.
Well, that's my point. Like by accessing the virtual machine, you could be accessing, all right, fine. You could be accessing a desktop with a bunch of tools that you could open up. Like, but you would all... This just seems to be like a browser through a virtual machine.
You mean virtual machine through a browser?
But into another virtual machine, or into another browser, right? Because in order to access, you know, Tor stuff.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Like what they're really providing here is they're providing the anonymity. They're not providing, you know, much in the way of new tools.
Right. It's the anonymity and it's the one degree of separation so that you don't get compromised. by going out on the dark web.
But like you said, like you can basically do that through another, by just using a VDI infrastructure or something. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. No, it's better than nothing for sure. I just feel like they could do more. I feel like there's a couple places they could do more here. I feel like they could, since they're providing you, and this is a quote enhancement to their Kerberos, I don't know how you pronounce that, investigation platform. So maybe the investigation platform has that. Maybe that's the tool set. This is just the browsing portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me kind of sad because how many organizations are actually doing dark web monitoring themselves? I was kind of hoping that this would be like a freemium model or a free model. So for example, you could use the tool for free, but since they're providing the proxy in the browser, they would get to see all of your results. That would be interesting. You could like crowdsource intelligence. You could turn this loose and have, you know, a couple hundred analysts that are, you know, going through for free and you're kind of just watching what they're doing and watching where they're going.
Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah, that is something I was thinking about when I was reading through that, hoping that it would be fairly inexpensive. I don't know. They have to pay for that VDI infrastructure. Depending on how they're hosting it, that can get pricey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not going to argue they should just provide this for free to everybody because that costs money for them to do. But if they got value out of it themselves, like maybe it'd be worth it for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. But I think this, like I said before, I think this is a great idea. It lowers the bar for dark web research, which is good. And the more people we get on the dark web doing research, the better.
Yeah. I don't think it solves the main issue, though, because I've actually thought about this several times. I've been like, man, it'd be cool to, we talked about this before. It'd be cool to go out on the dark web and go find out what the bad guys are doing. But like the main root of the cause is not like how do you do it? Because installing Tor is super easy. Using, you know, VPNs and proxies to hide your IP address is fairly easy. You could spin up I don't know how hard it is or how easy it is for an individual to spin up a VDI, but I think they offer those for individuals too now. So the hard part is like, how do you find the criminals? How do you find those websites? And how do you know Russian or whatever language they're in?
Well, that's just what I was thinking. Maybe that's one of the tools they built into it is automatic translation for GPT-4.
We can't go a podcast without being AI something.
Nope.
Sorry. That was my
fault. Yeah. So whenever, you know, on English or maybe you're Russian research and you want to read English on the dark web, you know, whatever, it'll do the language translation for you automatically.
Hmm.
Oh, that could be one of the whiz bang things in their toolkit.
Yeah.
But the more eyes that are on the dark web, the better, because the more eyes that are out there, the more we're going to learn about what happens there. And the more quote unquote good guys that are there, the more time and effort the bad guys have to spend vetting whoever they're communicating and working with.
So you know what, though? Actually, the more you talk about that, the more I do want this. Make this free and then make it so that you can see other people's analysis. So you can like start off where they left off. Like one guy goes out and finds a new site and they poke around for a few minutes, but they run out of time. The next guy logs in and they can see, oh, here's this new site that nobody's ever seen before. And now all of a sudden you have like a flood of folks like joining in to like really explore the site and figure everything out and map it and start documenting intelligence from it. Like that would actually be awesome.
Yeah. And maybe they'll do that for your company. You know, maybe it'd be a persistent VDI or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to allow it to be integrated with their case management.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's always the hard part, right? Is documenting it and sharing the information. So this could be truly wonderful if A, it gives a bunch of new people access to it, and B, allows them to share and see that information.
Absolutely. All right. So
since you added, you get three articles this time. You added a bonus article.
The final and article for today is insurers can't use war argument. Court rules in favor of Merck in $1.4 billion cyber attack coverage case.
I saw this Thursday or yesterday. I think maybe it was yesterday. And I was like, oh man, we should have talked about this week. We've already got all of our articles. And you were just like, nope, just adding it. Boop.
I'm sorry. Should I have asked permission?
No, it's good.
So a New Jersey appellate court upheld the lower court's ruling that a group of insurers can't use war as an argument to deny Merck pharmaceutical coverage from the $1.4 billion cyber attack that happened in 2017 from NotPetya. And we actually talked about this way back in episode 46, when the original court ruling came out. And what the judge said was, because the NotPetya cyber attack did not involve military action, you can't use that as an exclusion from coverage under the War Act exclusion. And to quote the judge, he said, "The exclusion of damages caused by hostile or warlike action by a government or sovereign power in times of war or peace requires the involvement of military action. Coverage could only be excluded here if we stretch the meaning of hostile to its outer limit." So this
interesting, like, involves the involvement of, so are they saying that if this had been done by military personnel, would that qualify as a military action, or does a military action have a specific definition?
See, I was thinking the same thing, but I think the way that I understood it from the article was he was couching in physical terms. There need to be physical military involvement, not simply military involvement at all. So I think that's where, how they're separating it here.
Apparently, so I'm in Law Insider. War and military action means war, including undeclared or civil war. 2, warlike action by a military force, including action in hindering or defending against an actual or expected attack by any government, sovereign, or other authority using military personnel or agents. Or 3, insurrection, rebellion, revolution, usurped power, action taken by a government in hindering or defending any of these. I don't know. Yeah.
I think this might not be the last time this comes up.
Yeah.
But at least at this point, it is solidified in U.S. law anyway, the separation of cyber war from war in the courts.
Interesting.
And I think this is going to lead to a lot more very specific exclusions in cyber insurance policies, you know, kind of like we saw from the Lloyd's of London and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so is this basically going to be anytime it's attributed to an APT, they're going to be like, all right, boom, APT, not covered.
Well, I think that's what they were trying to do here with this, and the judge said no.
Well, but I'm talking about the specific exclusions. Like, what are the specific exclusions going to say? Are they going to say if it is tied back to an APT, which will be interesting for companies, because companies love to say it's an APT because that means they couldn't defend against it.
Right.
But if their insurance specifically excludes attacks by APTs.
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because in the Lloyd's of London addendum or rider, they specifically said in there, the insurance company is the decider for what is and APT. What is not. So I think you might see stuff like that.
Yeah.
But simple government involvement is not enough to get the exclusion under the active war clause that is in virtually all insurance contracts today.
I think even if they don't add those riders, then they're going to crank your rates up again. So I think either way, it sucks for companies and they're not going to get the coverage they think they're getting out of this.
Yeah. I mean, well, if those insurance carriers have to shell out $1.4 billion, everybody's rates are going up. They got to throw out that payday. So they get to cover that cost. But you should be sure to read through your insurance contract at least a few times and talk to your legal team to make sure that it means what you think it means, or it doesn't mean what you think it doesn't mean. So you don't get caught off guard when it comes down to having to go into court over one of these kind of situations. But as I said, that's the last article for today. Thanks for listening to the Security Serengeti podcast, and follow us on Twitter @SerengetiSec and subscribe and listen on your favorite podcast app.